Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The Runaways were an all-girl rock group that formed in L.A. in 1975, turned heads in New York at CBGB's, became huge stars in Japan, and then crashed and burned after 4 short years. The group, which included Lita Ford, Joan Jett, and Cherie Curry, has seen its story told before, on screen and in print. But now the music writer Evelyn McDonald is releasing a book called Queens of Noise, The Real Story of the Runaways. She joins us by phone from L.A. Evelyn McDonald, welcome back to Soundcheck.
I'm so happy to be back.
With The Real Story of the Runaways. So this is, as I mentioned, a story that we've seen in film and it's been told numerous times before. What made you think that we were not getting the real story?
Well, the film was a biopic. It was clearly not a documentary. I'm referring to the film The Runaways, the for Sigismonde 2010 movie starring Kristen Stewart and Dakota Fanning, a movie I enjoyed very much. However, it was essentially a version of the book Neon Angel, which was Cherie Curry's memoir of her time in The Runaways, which is also a good book, but limited in scope. Cherie Curry was not actually in The Runaways for the entire band's duration, and The Runaways was a diverse group of individuals who had varying points of view on their saga and some disagreements about what was fact and fiction in Cherie's book. So there was also another documentary in this case, another movie, Edge Play, that told the point of view of many of the band members, but left out a seminal player, Joan Jett.
Yeah. So you got something that all these previous efforts didn't get, which was nearly unanimous participation.
Right. And also, I was an outsider. I'm an objective journalist, historian, looking, you know, at them from a distance. I wasn't in the band, so. I could look objectively and try to incorporate everybody's point of view.
And how hard,
even if they didn't participate.
Uh-huh. And how hard was it to get, you know, Joan Jett and Cherie Curry and all the rest of them to talk to you?
Well, it wasn't easy, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It was harder for some than for others.
You had a chance to maybe dispel some of the, if not mythology, at least some of the one-sidedness of the film and of some of the other things that you've mentioned.
Right, and I think I did some dispelling of mythologies also.
Let's give people a chance to hear who we're talking about. The Runaways sort of appear on the scene in the mid-1970s, and, you know, they look like a bunch of teenage runaways, and they certainly play up that with this early hit called Cherry Bomb.
Stay at home, can't stay at school.
Cherry Bomb from The Runaways, from their debut album released in 1976. Joan Jett and Kim Fowley, their manager, wrote the song, lead vocals by Cherie Curry. Evelyn McDonald's book is called Queens of Noise, The Real Story of the Runaways. I would imagine, Evelyn, that if you were the father of a teenage girl in 1976 and heard that song, that's like your worst nightmare.
Yeah. Probably. Obviously, they are playing with their jailbait imagery very specifically, and the multiple meanings of Cherry, and of course playing off Cherie Curry's name.
Mm-hmm. Were they actually runaways?
No. None of them were actually runaways, except for the woman Carrie Crome, who wrote some of their lyrics, and it was partly her idea for the band to form, for there to be an all-girl band to mm-hmm. sing her songs, and she did eventually run away from home. They did tend to come from broken homes in California, the 1970s, high divorce rate. And they definitely were girls who wanted to explore the world mm-hmm. and get out of their suburban environments. And they certainly achieved that.
Right.
They traveled the world. They went to Japan. They toured Europe a few times. They toured North America.
And they did so as, they were minors, when they got together, right? They were 16,
absolutely.
15 even.
Yes, they were very young. They had to get their parents to sign the contracts that they signed with Kim Fowley. And they did move away from home, some of them, while they were still underage. They did go, Joan Jett and Lita Ford, the guitar player, actually went and lived with Kim Fowley for a while and then got their own apartment. So they were certainly independent young women. And, this was a time when rock and roll was getting a little... little fat around the paunch, Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones weren't the spring chickens they wanted to be. So these young girls all of a sudden appear on the rock scene. And of course there were young girls on the rock scene, but these girls were playing guitars and writing songs. And they were really a breath of fresh air. I mean, they were really embraced in Los Angeles.
Two things there I want to follow up on, Evelyn. One is Kim Fowley, their manager, big topic. Let's get to him in a moment. But as you just said, they're writing their own songs. This was not some prefab group that was put together and then, fed songs by some male Svengali. They were out there not just playing songs, but writing them.
Right. This is true. I mean, there was a Svengali-like figure involved, which was Kim Fowley, and we will get to him in 1 minute. But Kim wanted them to not just be the Monkees. He wanted them to write their songs. He was a 35-year-old man who didn't want to, who was trying to figure out what it was like to be a teenage girl. And he really valued their opinions and their input, and he encouraged them to write songs. And I think Joan Jett wrote some of the best songs she ever wrote while she was in The Runaways.
And you mentioned Carrie Crome, who actually co-wrote this next song with Joan Jett and Kim Fowley and Sandy West. This is from the album Queens of Noise, from which Evelyn McDonald has taken the title of her new book about this band, The Runaways.
California!
Called California Paradise by The Runaways from their 1977 record, Queens of Noise. The Runaways are the subject of Evelyn McDonald's new book, Queens of Noise, The Real Story of The Runaways. All right, so let's talk about Kim Fowley, their manager. I mean, Evelyn, it seems like it would be easy to find something unsavory in this 35-year-old guy who's shepherding all these underage young women around, but you paint a much more complex portrait of this guy. Or maybe he paints it himself, since he seems to have kept you on the phone for literally hours on end.
Yes, and certainly there were unsavory things going on. Kim was by no means a saint. He was probably not equipped to handle five teenage girls and did things he shouldn't have done.
Like,
I don't
like what?
Think that abused them verbally, certainly, sexually harassed some of them. Sheree Curry spoke very poorly of Kim for a long time, but has actually come around and forgiven him, and he participated in the movie, The Runaways.
Mm-hmm. What about the way the band was perceived, you know, back in the 70s, when they were still on the scene and Kim Fowley was, you know, sort of pulling the strings behind the scene? How did press and radio perceive The Runaways?
Radio in the United States in particular did not like The Runaways. Got very little play in the United States. They got quite a lot of press coverage, including covers of Crawdaddy and of some of the English papers, and certainly in Japan they got a lot of press coverage. And then in Japan they had top 10 hits,
mm-hmm.
And albums, and media, numerous television appearances. But there was this tendency to write them off as a novelty act, to assume that they were just the female monkeys.
What about the music? I mean, was the music, you'll pardon the pun, playing second fiddle to the look of the Runaways?
It was hard for people to take the music seriously. It's hard for critics, I should say, to take the music seriously. Fans loved the music and their shows. They were a very popular live band. They always converted critics during their shows. You know, I quote many reviews where even critics who had shrugged them off before say, well, you know what, I saw them, and actually they really do play their instruments, as it turns out, and they can play, and they put on quite a good show.
You also quote Lisa Robinson in Cream magazine saying that they do near-perfect imitations of rock stars doing imitations. So they didn't convert everybody.
Which was a really good line, I have to say.
Yeah, it is.
Pretty good cut down.
What was going on in Japan that made the Runaways so huge there?
Well, you know, I think the Japanese love people who put on a show and who are like cartoonist superheroes. So they, you know, they loved Suzy Quatro. They loved Kiss and the Beatles, and they would go on to love Cheap Trick. And also, I think that in Japan, they had a particularly female audience who, I think, looked up to these women as superheroes expressing themselves in ways that maybe they didn't get to express themselves in the more closed Japanese society.
So you get that 1977 recording live in Japan, and you hear this song, Neon Angels on the Road to Ruin, and it's a pretty sobering title in light of what happens next, but we'll get to that part of the story in a moment. Here's The Runaways. That's The Runaways live in Japan in 1977. The kind of manic reaction of the fans there in Japan seems to have taken even The Runaways by surprise. That song is called Neon Angels on the Road to Ruin. Evelyn McDonald's with me on Soundcheck, author of the new book Queens of Noise, The Real Story of The Runaways. With the benefit of hindsight, Evelyn, do you look at a title like Neon Angels on the Road to Ruin and wonder who knew what when?
Yeah, no, it is. It's sadly ironic. And, you know, this was one of the sort of bullying tactics that Kim Fowley had, was he would tell them that the band was only going to last 5 years because they couldn't call themselves the Runaways when they were in their 20s. So he always sort of held out this ticking time bomb over them that they weren't built to last. They were built for speed, but not for endurance.
Right.
And I think that they were really ground up. You know, they toured and played and recorded and in such a short period of time. that I think that they were very burnt out and ruined by the end of those 4 years.
Well, and you know, you think, well, they're touring constantly, they're making records, and maybe they're not big in the States, but they're big in Europe, and they're enormous in Japan. They must be making money. But then you write, you know, they're doing concerts because Lita needs to pay for her amp and stuff like that. You know, I mean, the money's hard to come by. There's the old song about bad contracts, you know, underage musicians who don't know what they're doing, signing away rights and stuff. We don't even have time to get into the parade of revolving bass players in the band, but it wasn't even 5 years. It was just 4 years. What was the death knell for the band?
Well, I think the death knell was when the record company just stopped supporting them. And they were out there on the road, on their own, literally abandoned, living from show to show, and still making really great music, but getting no promotional support, and then ultimately getting dropped.
And, you know, there was a lot of drug use and a lot of sniping between the members of the band. But some of those members, I mean, Joan Jett, of course, becomes one of the big solo artists of the 1980s. And what about the sort of lingering echoes, influence of the Runaways? Do you hear that in the Riot Girl movement of the 90s, for example?
Well, absolutely. The Riot Girl movement really reclaimed the Runaways from history and actively, you know, Cherry Bomb was covered by the band Bratmobile. Joan Jett produced one of Bikini Kill's greatest singles. I think in general the Runaways were one of the first punk bands, and mm-hmm. I also think they were one of the first hair metal bands, and I think the entire Los Angeles music scene of the rock scene of the next decade was heavily influenced by that band, whether it's, you know, the Sunset Strip scene or the mask punk scene, and you can trace, you know, Lita Ford was hanging out with Nikki Sixx, and Joan Jett was producing the Germs. So music in general, I think, was affected by the Runaways. Today, you still see their influence. And Cherie Currie has a huge following still and is still out there playing music. Cherie, Joan, and Lita are all out on the road and actively recording.
And all of them involved in this new book by Evelyn McDonald called Queens of Noise, The Real Story of the Runaways. And Evelyn, it is quite an amazing story, well told. Thanks for sharing it with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you for having me, John.